Punjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari. Gopi Jana Bala Bhagiri Bada Dhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Bala Bhagiri Bada Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yamuna Tira Badnachari. Yamuna Tira Badnachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari. Gopi Janna Bala Bhagiri Bada Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yamuna Tira Badnachari. Yamuna Tira Badnachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Parivakacharya Stotar Sata Shishi Bad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Vancha Kalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo. So I'd like to ask the blessings of all the assembled devotees and everyone you know who could give spiritual strength. I'm filling in for Tamahar Prabhu. He was supposed to give today. So I just really appreciate all your blessings. Hare Krishna. And I didn't know that the feast was around Sataputta Prabhu, I mean, sponsored in his honor. And it reminded me that I had the good fortune sometimes to attend classes when I lived at Gitanagari, and he and the BI and the BTG staff all were in Philadelphia for some years. So there was a period of a few years where His Holiness Ramapad Swami would host retreats Memorial Day weekend and Labor Day weekend. And a whole bunch of people would come, like 80 or 90 people. But the rest of the year, there was basically just deities, cows, and maybe a dozen devotees on a 200-plus acre farm. I lived off the farm, but it was austere in its own way. But when the devotees would come and give these seminars, it was really wonderful. And I do remember attending one class that Sataputta Prabhu gave about the Parallels book, The Alien Identities. And I've read several of his books, and I don't mean to go on advertising the books, but why not, in one sense. What I appreciated about his verbal delivery and his books was that although he was highly intellectual, brilliant mathematician and scientist, he actually had the ability to present his ideas in a way that anybody, you know, that was listening intently could understand. And that was really a gift. And now that I'm saying that, I remember hearing of Srila Prabhupada in a similar context. When he would dictate his books, there was a dictaphone and a tape recorder, and that particular time of technology, they measured how much a person had recorded in digits. So in the morning, one time after Prabhupada had been dictating his purports at night, one devotee asked him, "Srila Prabhupada, how many digits did you do last night?" And Prabhupada said, "Oh, I can translate very quickly, but it takes great concentration how to present it for the common man." I had a friend, she has passed away, a Bengali lady. She and her husband, Dr. and Mrs. Bhattacharjee, gave lots of money to Mayapur Project when they passed away. But anyway, she told me that when she was a young woman, she lived for a while in an ashram of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's with other ladies. And she tried reading his books, but his language, as you know, if you've tried to read anything he's written, is very, very high, very, very. Even Srila Prabhupada said, when he first sat in the presence of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he couldn't understand, but he liked to hear. So anyway, Madhavi told me that then to get married, she moved to America, married her husband, and soon after, she saw these Westerners wearing saffron robes and shaven head and sikas, and it's like, what's going on here? She got some books and started reading, and it didn't take much time for her. She became Prabhupada's follower and read Prabhupada's books. And then, some years later, she again picked up a book of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's, and now she could understand it. So how about that? So that being said, we're charged on Sundays to read from Bhagavad Gita because it's the ABCs of Krishna consciousness. So I'll start by Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasatim Vyasam Tato Jaya Mudiraya. Before reciting this Bhagavad Gita, which is precursor to Srimad Bhagavatam, let us, I guess it's not appropriate in one sense, before reciting Srimad Bhagavatam, we say we must first offer our obeisances to the personality of Godhead Narayan, unto Nara Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and to Srila Vyasadeva, the author. So it so happens that today is a special day. It's Vasant Panchami. Does anybody know what is Vasant Panchami? Raise your hand if you're familiar. Okay, good. Well, in India, it's the first day of spring. And I think here we're also remembering a couple weeks ago how very, very cold it was in north central Florida. So this feels like spring to us. But they have a way of celebrating everything with a festival. So on Vasant Panchami, in Vrindavan, all the deities wear yellow dresses. All the sweet shops sell only yellow sweets. All the garland sellers sell garlands made of yellow mustard flowers. And everybody that can has something yellow to wear, puts it on in celebration. Even in the West, you know, daffodils are like one of the first signs of spring, these beautiful yellow, happy sunshine flowers coming out. So on Vasant Panchami, on the Vaishnav calendar, there's many things listed, which, you know, because we're supposed to read Bhagavad Gita, I think I'll read one verse and purport, and then if there's time, I can tell you about some of the things that are on the Vaishnav calendar for today. Okay, so I've opened up to the verse, which is chapter 9, text 2. And it's simple. I'll read it and you can respond. We'll just read it once. Raja Vidya Raja Guyam. Pavitram Idam Uttamam. Pratyakshavagamam Dharmyam. Susukam Kartam Avyayam. So the translation, this knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self through realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting, and it is joyfully performed. So, do you want to repeat? Shall we say it together one time? Yeah. Okay. This knowledge is the king of education. The most secret of all secrets.
The most secret of all secrets.
It is the purest knowledge.
It is the purest knowledge.
And because it gives direct perception of the self.
And because it gives direct perception of the self.
By realization.
By realization.
It is the perfection of religion.
It is the perfection of religion.
It is everlasting.
It is everlasting.
And it is joyfully performed. Okay, so let's see. It's a long purport. I won't read the whole purport, actually, of all the verses to pick. There's like 5 or 6 pages, but I'll begin it a little bit. So Srila Prabhupada's purport. This chapter of Bhagavad Gita is called the King of Education because it is the essence of all doctrines and philosophies explained before. And I'm going to skip to the beginning of the next paragraph. Generally, people are not educated in this confidential knowledge. They are educated in external knowledge. As far as ordinary education is concerned, people are involved with so many departments: politics, sociology, physics, chemistry, mathematics, astronomy, engineering, etc. There are so many departments of knowledge all over the world, and many huge universities. But there is, unfortunately, no university or educational institution where the science of the spirit soul is instructed. Yet the soul is the most important part of the body. Without the presence of the soul, the body has no value. Still, people are placing great stress on the bodily necessities of life, not caring for the vital soul. So actually, Srila Prabhupada once spoke at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, one of the most important, you know, technological universities. And he asked the students who came, can you tell where is the soul? They couldn't do it. You know, and so he was, and he gave a similar class presentation. It was small boys. I forget where it was, but he asked. He said, "Is there anyone intelligent? Who's the most intelligent?" And all the students pointed to this one boy. They were maybe 12, 13 years old. So the boy came up and sat there, and Prabhupada said, "Can you point to your ear? You know, where is your ear?" And the boy's like scoffing at such a question, you know, he points to his ear. "Can you point to your elbow?" He's, that's easy. You know, point to your nose. He's thinking, this is, can you point to yourself? What to do? So this is actually what Prabhupada's talking about. There's so many technological skills, and we certainly need them. It's not One time Prabhupada landed coming from a plane and there were so many reporters having, you know, they wanted to interview this big guru, and they said, he was speaking about spirituality, so they said and I think he must have said something about the airplane being such a cumbersome way to travel, that they did have airplanes in the spiritual world, and yogis could travel in this way or that, And people could even fly on a flying carpet. Prabhupada was saying all this just straight out to the reporter. And the one reporter asked him, "Your divine grace, if people can travel in so many ways, why did you come on American Airlines?" And Prabhupada said, "Just to be one with you." You know, so this is the thing. He was so in tune with people that he could get right on their wavelength, you know, and yet at the same time, it wasn't that he wasn't aware of high spiritual matters, but his concern was, he knew actually Bhagavad Gita is supposed to be spoken to devotees, discussed among devotees, but he had the challenge of coming to a place. If you listen to some of the lectures he gave in Dr. Mishra's ashram before he even moved to 26 Second Avenue, these elderly students of Dr. Mishra, yoga students, so-called, he mentioned something about Krishna. He said, Krishna's standing in threefold bending form, standing with his flute. Has any of you seen a picture of Krishna? And he looked around the room, and no one had ever seen a picture of Krishna. So he had to create devotees and then teach Bhagavad Gita to them. Actually, I was thinking today, because, you know, it sort of came on me, oh, you give the class. There was a professor, Thomas Hopkins, at Franklin and Marshall College in Pennsylvania. So it was only an hour and a half from where we lived at Gita Nagari. So he came there a couple times, but also there was a book where he mentions how he was actually a scholar of Vaishnavism in the 60s, before Srila Prabhupada came to America. So then 65, Prabhupada arrived, 66, he had a small temple begun with maybe a dozen followers, but somehow this young professor got word that there's a Vaishnav guru in New York City. So he went there. And when Thomas Hopkins went there, Srila Prabhupada wasn't there. He had gone to San Francisco to open a second center. And this was a professor of Vaishnavism. He was asking these very enthusiastic young people that obviously were very enlivened about what they were doing, something Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, something Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, something about Gopal Bhatta Goswami. They were like blank. And he was like, how is this? These people don't know anything at all about Vaishnav history. And yet they're so dedicated. They're so enlivened. I think he came a couple of times before he came and Srila Prabhupada was there. And then he understood, oh, they have this living saint amongst them who has completely inspired them to give up illicit sex, meat, fish, or eggs, any form of intoxication, all kinds of speculative gambling. I'm talking 1966 in New York City, the Lower East Side. I mean, that's amazing. Allen Ginsberg said when he was interviewed for the Leelamrita, he said, to choose to attend to the Lower East Side, what kindness and humility and intelligence. Because these were actually the people that were the forefront of seekers among the youth. When Prabhupada came to Gainesville, one news reporter asked him, all your followers are young. Why are there no old people here? And Prabhupada said, at the university, or why are there all young people at the university? She said, well, I guess that's the age for education. And he said, yes, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. You know, and so he went to where the young people that were seeking were. Krishna sent him there. He didn't know ahead of time, but he was trusting that Krishna would send him to the right place. And as far as we're concerned, he did. Yeah. So I'll read a little bit more, and I'll read a little bit more. Sometimes people are under the impression that the soul is different from the body, and that when the body is finished, or one is liberated from the body, the soul remains in a void and becomes impersonal. But actually, that is not the fact. How can the soul, which is so active within this body, be inactive after being liberated from the body? It is always active. If it is eternal, then it is eternally active. And its activities in the spiritual kingdom are the most confidential part of spiritual knowledge. These activities of the spirit soul are therefore indicated here as constituting the king of all knowledge and the most confidential part of all knowledge. So today, I thought, let me hear from Prabhupada before I have to go and speak. So I chose a lecture that he gave in New York in 1966, and he was talking on this very point that some philosophers say that, after we leave the body, we just go into a void. And he was like, it makes no sense. He said, the body is like a vehicle. You're driving in your vehicle, you're making all these decisions, I'll turn right, I'll turn left, I'll go here and there. And so you get out of the body and you stop existing. You get out of the car. So it's like, the body is just like a car. So it's not like when you leave the car, you stop existing. We're the soul, and the soul is eternally a person. Like Brahmatirtha Prabhu was saying, this is one of the key things Prabhupada wanted his scientist devotees to get across to people. So, if anybody, I'm just going to stop here and see if anybody has any questions or comments, and we can talk about that, and otherwise I can tell about some of the special features of today. Are there, okay.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Mataji, for the great class. Quick question. When Krishna says Raja Guhyan, like the most secret knowledge, I wonder about that because, he spoke to Viva Swam millions of years ago, and it's been propagated throughout the universe, and again, 5,000 years ago. So I wonder, in what sense is that secret?
Okay, that's a good question. How many people do you suppose there are in the city of Gainesville? Or the state of Florida, the United States, who understands that they're not this body? Even we are reading it on a daily basis, some of us for not just years, but decades, and to actually realize that I am something different from the body, that I'm Krishna's eternal servant. It's simple, but it's not easy to understand. So it's secret because Krishna keeps the living entities that still at proportionate to the amount of our material involvement, material desires, our vision is covered and we can't access. But it's an open secret. It's not that anyone is forbidden to learn. Sometimes, I think according to the strict Vedic system, the smarta brahmanas would say, these Western mulettas, they said that when Prabhupada first brought Westerners back to India. How can they study? Only brahmanas can study the Vedas. But Krishna says, by all the Vedas, I am to be known. And he's giving this knowledge freely that we're not these bodies, we're the soul inside. And Even women, vaishyas, and sudras can approach the supreme destination by learning this knowledge. But it's not, you have to want it. That's what makes it so rare. Does that help? Okay, Hare Krishna. Any other point just now? Oh, okay, here's one.
Sorry for that. Yeah, so just what you just said, we have to want it. How do we get ourselves to want it?
That's the purification of manmana bhavamad bhakto. Just think of me, become my devotee, worship me, and offer homage to me. That's another verse Krishna says. By so doing, I promise you'll come to me. So always think of me. It's purifying. We come to the temple. We see the beautiful forms of the deities, and who could not be inspired by seeing Krishna and Balaram with heart-shaped necklaces and little bags with heart-shaped cookies inside. Yeah. You know what I mean? And every time, there's so, you know, every day is like a festival. And so we go and think of it later. The other day I came to the temple in the morning, and Chota Gorni Thai, they had on these little, I don't know what kind of flower it was, but it looked just like miniature lotus flowers, like buds, like lotus buds. And so all day long I kept thinking, Gorni Thai were wearing lotus garlands, but they were so little, you know. So that's just one sense, seeing. But the main thing, the first thing is hearing. By hearing, we purify our hearts. And if we hear the Hare Krishna mantra, and then we repeat it, hearing, chanting, remembering, serving all these nine processes of devotional service, they purify our hearts. And as we become purified, then we want to be with Krishna. Who would want to stay here in this world of duality where people are always fighting about the most ridiculous, insignificant things and big things? You know what I mean? It's crazy. Prabhupada said in this age, even husband and wife will quarrel over trifles, you know. Or a pauper is proud of his penny. He saw a man carrying, what was it, a half-burnt piece of firewood on the train. And it was like he's attached to his firewood, you know. It's like, no, this world is not our home. We have lots of activities of both our body and our mind, but in the spiritual world, there's no deterioration. The apparent envy just means, oh, she made a garland for Krishna that made him so happy, I want to make an even better garland. You don't want to pull them down. You're happy to see that person made Krishna happy, let me do it even more. Is that all right?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare Bola Dvaita Charja Prabhu. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Prabhu, this is amazing that you are assigned to talk on this topic. Who have followed Srila Prabhupada? I would say that over the years, and again, I'm not going to preach to the choir, because all of us wish we knew Satputa Prabhu more on individual level than we did. And I was one of the fortunate ones who was able to associate with Dr. Tompkins in different levels. Brilliant man. And of course, Satputa Prabhu will always be there for us. I cannot say much, but I thank you very much, Prabhu, for giving us this information.
Hare Krishna. And when I was looking around while I was singing, I saw you there, and I was thinking, oh, give me your blessings. Advaita Charja Prabhu was for some time, this is maybe 40 years ago or more or something, Swarga and I, for a little while, were in charge of the Adopt-a-Cow program at Gitanagari. It was the first of, there's Save the Cow, but that was the first, and we took over from Gaur Hari Prabhu, who used to live here for many years. And then when we were in charge, Dwaita Charja would come with us to different temples, and he would speak because he was so first class. And so we were very fortunate to have your association way back then. Thank you, Prabhu. Hare Krishna. Well, I will say, when we were saying that prayer, Narayanam Namaskritcha, one of the people whose mercy we prayed for was the goddess Saraswati. Today's also Saraswati appearance day or puja. So she's the goddess of learning. And particularly, although people do approach her and pray, please, you know, give me good grades, let me pass my exams nicely. She can do that, but she's a servant of the Lord, and her best education she can give is this kind of education, where you get to learn about who am I, the spirit soul, and who am I in relation to other living beings and to the Lord Krishna. Oh, I'm Dasa, Das, Anudas. I'm the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord, who's the beloved and maintainer of the gopis. So there's one nice story, which most of you know for sure, but we all like to hear the stories again. So when Lord Chaitanya was still in Navadvip, he had a school he was teaching, and one big scholar, Keshava Kashmiri, came, and he had heard that in Navadvip, it was a great center of learning. So he was just going places and debating with people and showing off his learning and winning prizes. And he went to Navadvip, and the people said, let's put Nimai Pandit there first, because he's so young, and if he can defeat the Kashmiri, then we're fine. And so Lord Chaitanya was the very first person in Navadvip. And Keshava Kashmiri came, and Lord Chaitanya was very respectful because it was an older scholarly person. And so he received him very well. And Keshava Kashmiri, Lord Chaitanya asked him, can you compose some, I've heard that you're quite a Sanskrit scholar. Can you compose some verses about the Ganga? And so on the spot, Keshava Kashmiri created 100 Sanskrit verses in perfect rhyme and meter, praising the Ganges River, and he recited them one after another after another, and Lord Chaitanya Nimai Pandit sat quietly, and then the case of Kashmiri asked, can you tell me, Lord Chaitanya asked him, well, on your 60th, or you know, 60-something verse that you spoke, there were some literary faults. Could you please explain? And Kashmir, is this young boy is challenging me? I'm such an erudite scholar. He said, what were the faults? And he said, well, in one case, you referred to the goddess Uma as Bharati Bhavani. Isn't it you've referred to Lord Shiva as Bharat, the husband of the wife of Lord Shiva. So that's does it not imply that she might have another husband? You know, so like that, he found two or three things out of this one verse, and you had some nice glories in that verse also, and he named them, and the scholar's like totally blown away. He was a devotee of Goddess Saraswati. So he went home, he'd never been humiliated like this by a young boy, and he prayed to her, what, have I offended you in some way? I've worshipped you so nicely, you always let me win all the debates, what happened today? And so when he went to sleep, he dreamed. And the goddess Saraswati came and told him, You don't understand who this young boy is. It's actually Krishna. He's my Lord. So you're trying to defeat somebody by worshiping me, but he's my Lord. So it can't be done. So next day, Keshava Kashmiri came back and fully surrendered at the lotus feet of the Lord. And that was, yeah, a nice pastime. It's also the appearance or disappearance of Raghunath Das Goswami, which someone else could give 3 hours talk on. And Raghunandana Thakur, he's the one that his father, he was a young Brahmana boy. His father went away and he said, while I'm away, can you please make the offering to our deities? Because I'm not going to be back in time. So he was just a little boy. His mother gave him the meal she cooked. He put it on the altar. No one else is in the room. He's looking at the Lord and he's saying, you have to eat. You have to eat. My father told me to make the offering to you. I'm going to get in trouble. He was talking like that to the deity. And so the deity came and sat and he ate everything. So Raghunandana took the plate back to his mother and there was nothing on it anymore. And she said, where'd the offering go? He said, well, the Lord ate it. And so when the father came home, he heard about this and he thought, this is extraordinary. He asked the boy, thinking he did something naughty. He ate the offering himself and then told this little white lie. He said, no, the Lord came and ate the offering. He said, can you do it again? And the father hid behind the curtain. And the boy was so sincere, this Raghunandana Thakur, he was so sincere, small boy, he told the Lord, come and eat. If you don't eat, I'll get in trouble. And the Lord again came and ate, and his father got to see. So later, when Lord Chaitanya saw the father, he said, who is the father and who is the son? And the father said, Raghunandana is the father, and I am the son, because he's a better devotee than I am. And it's the disappearance day of Vishnupriya, Lord Chaitanya's wife, who became widowed when he took sannyas at age 16. And so her austerities were so great, she would just chant one round of Maha Mantra and set aside a grain of rice. And all day she would do that. However many grains of rice there were, by the end of the day, she'd cook and offer, and that would be her sustenance. So it's said that she grew as thin as the new moon. And we just had the new moon in the sky. You know, they're so beautiful. Last night, Venus was so close, very beautiful. But it always, whenever I see the new moon, I always think of Srimati Vishnupriya. So unless somebody has a question, we can go and honor the Lord's prasad. Oh, okay, Prabhu.
A quick note on that pastime with Lord Chaitanya and Kashmir Pandit, after all his work he did, and he was quite embarrassed because of the situation, some of the disciples were kind of ridiculing him and making fun of him, and Lord Chaitanya was not happy with that, and he kind of dismissed that, and says, no, this man, you know, he's very qualified, because he wasn't out to shame the guy, he just was, you know, reciprocating.
Right.
So Chaitanya's mercy is kind of not always understood.
Right.
It's a great thing.
That's very, very wonderful, actually. Thank you for pointing that out, because this is the thing. Sometimes, especially in the earlier days, but, you know, it's always somebody's early days, and they're all fired up, they're out preaching, and they go to someone and make an argument, and then they come away thinking, boy, I really smashed him. And is that person likely to come and visit a temple? It's funny because Brahmatirtha Prabhu mentioned the two main scientists in the BI, and they're different natures. Sadaputta Prabhu was very much the intellectual, and Swarup Damodar, Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj, I heard when they invited all those scientists to come to Mayapur, he made such nice arrangements for all their prasadam, all served so nicely, first class prasadam, their hearts were melted. So this is the thing, it's like both things must be there, a strong intellect and a soft heart. what is it? People don't care how much that you know, but they want to know how much you care. So thanks for pointing that out. That's great. Mitra, Sena, Prabhu, Haribo.
Vishnu Priya, chanting on rice.
Yeah.
To chant one round and have one grain of rice, you'd end up with
100 grains.
64, maybe 100.
At max.
And that's nothing.
Not very much.
But just to chant one mantra on each grain, even that's pretty difficult. One cup of rice has 7,000 to 8,000 grains of rice.
Right.
So
right.
We chant 16, which is 1,728. So if you chant 64, what would that be? How many mantras is that?
It's a lot. I mean, how many grains of rice?
You might get a cup, yeah.
Yeah. We wouldn't do very well. Actually, I was thinking of when I very first heard about Krishna, and I became a vegetarian at the same time, of course. I read some little book. I think it was about fasting or vegetarianism, but I just remembered it today, thinking of her. In the preface to this book, they gave two examples of actual ladies. One was a nun, and one was a housewife. But they were both very, I think they were both Catholic, but they were both religious in any case. Extraordinary case. One of them only drank water, and the other one had some very small amount, or it's a long time since I read it, but it was like this, something would be physically impossible for almost anyone to do. But both the ladies said that they understood that this was a special gift from God. It wasn't for everybody, but it was just to show that we're different from the body. So she clearly was not in bodily consciousness. So, yeah. But we are. So that's why it's good for us to take more and more Krishna Prasadam, which is being served now under the pavilion. Thank you very kindly. Hare Krishna.